Tes, Pasuk Tes. Vatihi Ruach Hashem Ra'o El Shaul. Not just a bad spirit, a spirit from God. Ruach Hashem. Right? Notice the word Hashem interrupts between Ruach Ra'o and the word Ra'o. Targum has Ushras Ruach Bisha Min Kodom Hashem. As if though it says Ruach Ra'o Me'es Hashem. The reader must not be mistaken to think that this was just a simple depression on the part of Shaul, who's recognizing where things are going in his kingdom. The fact is, if he weren't so paranoid, he'd be able to live with the fact that he has a very successful underling named David. But he can't live with that. And he has this evil spirit that's coming from God. He has a spear in his hand, and David is playing the harp with his hand. That means David is a sitting target. What do you think that means? He tried to kill David by hitting David and the wall.
In the spear.
Ooh. Ouch. Right. Hitting the spear, shish kebab, into the wall. Yes.
Does that ever say Ruach Ra'ah from Hashem ever again throughout the Tanakh? So it never feels weird. I've never heard that.
Yeah, but it's to look it up. Who?
Is it in Bereshit?
No, I mean, this.
It doesn't. Like, we say that God hardened Pharaoh's heart, but never grew up.
No, not Ruach Ra'ah. No. This may be unique. Okay. Alright, so he says, I will. But when he says. Lahakot b'chanit b'david uvakir implies that he would do it in a way where, if he missed, finish my sentence. He could just say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I was just practicing throwing. I didn't realize you were right there. Wow, what a mistake." So that, in other words, I want to kill him, but in a way that doesn't arouse his suspicion if I don't kill him. Vayiftar mipnei Shaul. What do you think that word means? Vayiftar mipnei Shaul. It's like histalek, like peterechem. Not that he died. Why do we call someone who died someone who's nifter? Because he's mistalek minachayim. Siluk means to leave. Vayiftar mipnei Shaul, but he somehow managed to escape that. Vayaches hachanis bakir, and the spear hit the wall. Not the intended target before it would hit the wall. It just hit the wall. The pasuk does not tell us how that happened. We talked last class about the alleged excellent aim of Benjaminites, and he misses a sitting target at close range.
Could the pasuk not say why, just out of respect, because he still is the king?
Maybe. The Medrash says that David dropped the harp, bent over to pick it up, because David was not on guard. At least not the first time. When he went down to pick it up, it whooshed over his head. Psh. Let's make up. It actually caught on to his garment and he was stuck on the garment. Okay. V'David nos v'yimaleit b'layla hu. David escaped and he fled. What's b'layla hu? What does that mean? Balayla who? Shouldn't it be Balayla Ahu? Yeah. So there's Gemara in Erevin that says this is a Tanakh phenomenon, that when a word ends, a word ends with the same letter that the next word is supposed to begin with, sometimes that first word letter will fall out. So the Gemara notices this. And Balayla who is a terminology that appears quite often. It appears in the Torah. Vayishkav Balayla who? Not Ahu. Okay. How many times does this happen in the Tanakh? Maybe 50. But that's often enough. That's quite a bit. In fact, I can tell you this is amazing. I just saw this in Shmuel David Lutzato in Parshas Toldos. It says that that he uses this phenomenon of this letter connection. This is nothing to do with Shmuel, I'm just telling you the Parshanut issue. That he gives a few examples of this. It says, Vatomer Rivka El Yitzchok. Katzni b'chayai nipnei b'nos cheis. Im lokeach Yaakov isha b'nos cheis ko'ela l'malichayim. B'nos ha'aretz l'malichayim. She says, I hate those Hittite women that Esav married. You've got to send Yaakov away and find a wife from our family. She's very smart. She gets to send Yaakov away from the house without ever raising the real reason which he has to leave, which is because Esav wants to kill him. She doesn't want to talk about that with her husband because she doesn't want to raise that issue at all because she doesn't want Yitzchak to find out that she was behind it. Right? You get it? So look at this one. Batomer Rivka El Yitzchak. Next word. Katzti Bechayai. You see what I did on the board? In the Masorah, that kuf is a tiny letter. Right. So he uses this Masoretic phenomenon that Gemara Neirvin talks about to say when the same letter appears like this, see kuf kuf. What sometimes happened was that one of them fell out, and they didn't have enough room to put in the other letters, so they had to make it small. That explains why some letters in the Torah are small. For instance, what's the first two words in Vayikra? Small olive. Next word? Olive. Next word, next letter is what? Olive. Okay, so in our pasuk, don't be surprised that it says, Balai Lahu. There really should be another hey there, but that letter tends to fall out. When 10 is 2, 50, maybe 50, maybe even 100 examples. Shadal in his parish gives about 20 examples.
Shadal?
Shmuel David Lutzato. He's this direct descendant. I'm sorry, from a brother. Like a great grandfather's brother was the wrong father. Okay, so actually, you know what? Before I saw the Shadal, actually I saw it in the Torah Tmima. There's a pasuk in Lansbeek's Parsha that says that Abraham chased the people by Yudov Ad. What's the problem with that?
What is small dollar? What is it din?
Dun. What's the problem with that? There's no place called Dun yet. Dun is the name of Yaakov's son, after whom a whole area of Israel was named. What do you mean by Yudov Ad Dun? All right, it's anachronistic. Later on, it will be called Dun. That happens a lot. The Gan Eden story talks about Amalek and Ashur and Kidmas Eden and things like that. So what? But the Torah Tzvima says, but there is a nation called Dindon. Okay? So, Dalit can do double duty there. So can double duty, dollar dollar. Right? Okay, so that's an interesting thing. Anyway, that's what's happening in our pasuk. Okay, so vayimaleit v'layla hu, vayishlach Shaul malachim al beis David, l'shamro u'lahamiso baboker. So Shaul put guards at the door to kill David in the morning. Why didn't they just kill him at night? Ashkafically?
His wife said.
Because if they had killed him at night, they would have killed him.
I thought it was because his wife said, "Don't kill him at night."
No, I understand. The reason they might have given themselves is, listen, he's sleeping with his wife. His wife is the king's daughter. Right? Let him have a meal before he dies. I don't know, whatever it is. Let him be with his wife before we kill him. Let him have a night with his wife, and then we'll kill him in the morning. You get it? Okay. Well, maybe they just felt that if we run in, we'd like to kill him in bed. And if we kill him while his wife is there, we may kill her too. I don't know, whatever the reason is. But they decided to wait till the morning. Right? But Tagid the David, Michal Ishto Lemor. It's a very unusual way to say things, right? But Tagid the David, Michal Ishto Lemor. It should be But Tagid Michal, Ashes David. Right? But it means, you know what it means. Michal, David's wife, told him, if you don't get out of here they're going to kill you in the morning. How did she find this out? How do you think? Make up something. No?
She knows her father.
What? Maybe, what else? One of the workers in the palace probably, you know, who knew what was going down, warned her and said, listen, Michal, you don't want to be there at a certain time. They're planning to come in at 7 o'clock in the morning. Make sure that you're out washing something. Okay. So she found out. That's the way it was. I don't know how, but she found out. Why did she find out? It doesn't matter. Okay. How stupid are they? They didn't realize that she would tell her husband? Maybe they just thought that she has more loyalty to her father than to her husband. I don't know. But her reaction is, Vatirid Michal es David ba'ada chalon, vayilech vayivrach vayimalit. She let him out the window. What do you mean she let him out the window? Right? So hold on to my hair? What did she let him? Some sheets? Whatever it is, she helped him out. He went, he escaped, he fled, and he escaped. Why all these words? What do these three words imply? Vayelech? Come on, let's read this literary. Vayelech, vayivrach, vayimolet. What do those three words imply? Good, what else? Can you see that after Vayelech, he still had some escaping to do. But even after Vayivrach, he's not home free. He still has to Vayimalait. What do we mean? It's Lahavdil, I admit, Lahavdil. If you manage to escape the impossible, and you manage to escape the barbed wire fence at Auschwitz, you ever see what it was? It was electrified on one side, guarded by dogs, by many dogs in the middle section, another electrified fence, and on the outside of that were guard towers every 20, 30 feet with lights shining at all times at night. How would you manage to escape all of that inconceivable? If you did, you know what's facing you on the other side? Right? There were the townspeople just waiting to hand in a Jew for a little reward. Right? So, what do you have? In other words, you escaped this. So, I did the impossible. I got out of the palace. But then, who knows what's waiting for you out there? In other words, even after you vayelech, you still have to do a beis reish ches, barach. And even after doing a beis reish ches, you still are not saved yet. You still have to do vayimaleit. Okay. So these three words add to the tension and the stress of what this involved. Okay? Vatikach Michal. Now here's the pasuk that's treated in your syllabus. Look at pasuk Gimel. Vatikach Michal es hatrofim vatosem el hamita ve'iskvira izim sama mirashusa vatachas v'boged. It just lists this as if though it's so. Just a matter of fact. What are trofim? I mean, trophim appear very rarely in the Torah and in the Tanakh. They appear in the Torah. Sound familiar to anybody?
I mean, we had trophim.
Who has trophim in the Torah?
The Aron.
Do you remember Rachel stole her father's trophim? And Laban came in looking for them, right? Remember that? Trophim are idols in the shape of a human being, and I gotta tell you, the Torah doesn't tell us this, but we know from ancient sources that Trophim was a despicable Avodah Zarah. It was really a disgusting Avodah Zarah. It was an idol in the shape of a human being, carved out. In other words, it was hollow on the inside, right? It had an opening of a mouth, and what you did was you put in pieces of human sacrifice into the trophim, who would eat it, right? And then give asidos. He would give predictions after communicating with the spirit of that human that was just slaughtered. You don't want Trophim in your house. Right? What was Rachel doing with the Trophim? So Rashi says, you know, she stole, but no, but it kas. She hid them. She didn't take them to worship. Her father would have been all too happy to give her Trophim to worship if she wanted to worship them.
The giant idols.
Idols in the shape of a human being. How she was able to hide them from her father, these were miniature Trophim. Right? They're also for fertility. I know Rachel had an issue with that, and so did Michal. I'm not sure what to do with this because it uses it so matter-of-factly. Look at the Targum to the word. Can you see the Targum? Look it up. Look at Pasuk Yud Gimel in Targum. Unesivas Michal. Guys, you need me cross the dollars here. Unesivas Michal Yas. Next word. Salmonaya. What's a tselem? I mean, the Targum is not hiding an image. It's like a tselem is a, you know, is an idol.
It's hard to send to make sure it's clear that's not like something else.
Targum doesn't try to find that. It isn't trying to say that. Okay, the Radak says Targumot Salmonaya Behem Asuyim Bitmus Guf Ha'adam. She made it it was in the shape of a person. L'fichach sama o samba mita. She put it under the blanket so it would look like a person is there. Like you make a dummy in a bed when you don't want your counselor to know that you're not sleeping. V'makom rosho sama kvir ha'izim. She'id mek hisa'a rosh ha'adam. I've never met a goat with red hair, but okay. She put some hair at the front to make it look like a human being was sleeping there. She had met his sa'ar rosh ha'adam. Pirish kvirizim kar asui misar ha'izim. Means a pillow made from goat's hair. V'yona santir game guda di izaya v'chein amar v'medrash v'nusanak gud yayin tachas dobed al hamita. Son Olamar, good meor ha'izim. Right, now Radak goes in a different direction. Right? He says that it was a barrel of wine that she put there. Why does it call it Trophim? Because he just wanted to let you know that it was a barrel in the shape of that could fool someone into thinking it's a human being.
Who says this?
This is Radak. Yeah, basically, yeah. Ready? Let's continue reading in Radak. V'inyan ha-trafim, yesh meforshim. Regarding these trafim, right? Yesh meforshim, ki hem avodat gibulim. Some say they're avodah zara. How do we know? Kimo ha-trafim asher lelavan, shen Gun v'sa Rachel. Remember, like I just said, Rachel stole her father's trophy. Laban over to go obey the Avodas Gilulim Hayokim Oshemar. Lomo Gunafta es Elohai. He said, "Why have you stolen my gods?" So that trophy is definitely Avodah Zara. V'cholila cholila shahayav beis David Avodas Gilulim. God forbid that there was an Avodah Zara in David's house. Right? Some say that Trophim are in the shape also a human being, but it tells you the future. It tells you it's for astrology. That fits with what we know archaeologically. I don't know what Radak knew from archaeology, but he was much closer to the time they were using this than we are. Trafim were an Avodah Zarah that was meant to tell you, like, you ever see those eight balls, you know, you ask them a question and you got an answer from it, right? You ask the question, you sit there and you listen, and the answer is going to come into your head. And that's how Rav Nachman explains it. Okay.
What's
Michal doing with right. Truffle? So,
in the first place, God should have it in the first place.
Right. So he says, God forbid that there should be a Avodah Zarah in David's house. Rather, this was something, you know, if you go to a palm reader, or you look up at the stars, and you look up for it to tell you advice in the future, that's not a Avodah Zarah. It's a violation of a mitzvah saseh. Tamim tihi ayim Hashem Elokecha. Be pure with God. Don't look for those things. Right. So she used the trafim for those for that purpose.
So it's sin, but not a
Sin, but not a Avodah Zarah. Right. Yes.
Is that
Radak? It's his own parish. He says, "Bidvar Michal Kashel of Hareish, Lama Sama Usam B'Mita B'Makom David." According to this interpretation, it says, why would she put such a thing in bed? The second interpretation he doesn't like. While it's not a Avodah Zarah per se, but it doesn't look like a human being. The thing that she put in bed has to look like a person. Then he says, "V'hachacham Rabbi Avraham ben Ezra." People like to refer to Ben Ezra as the wise one. "Hachacham Rabbi Avraham ben Ezra zechro lebracha." Look at that. He should be remembered for good. The Radak liked Ibn Ezra very much. "Kusav ki hatrafim heim al tsuras ben adam v'yasui lekabel koach elyonim v'ha'eid shetrafim kain." Hatrafim shesoma Michal b'mita ad shechashvu shomer abayis shehim David. Wow, it was like just like a good luck charm. It wasn't about the Zara, and it wasn't to tell you the future. It was just like a good luck charm. That's a big chiddush. He quotes Ibn Ezra saying that that was the purpose, to put the good luck charm in bed and find out what's going to happen with my husband. Sort of like the second opinion, but it, at least it allows for it to be used as a dummy.
It's lucky.
Right, you okay? You know, there's a Gemara in Maseches Shabbos that talks about carrying certain charms. If you think it's going to make you feel better, that you're allowed to carry them on Shabbos in the Rishus HaRabim. So Rashi says, here in France we have such things, and he describes them. And he says, it's a rabbit's foot. I'm telling you, in the sixth paragraph of the seventh Shabbos.
Why is that allowed?
Or a fox's tooth. Never mind, it's allowed in general. How could it be allowed on a Thursday? Rashi says you're allowed to carry it on Shabbos with no Eruv, because it's going. That's only for a person who's mamish pikuach nefesh, someone who's deathly sick who thinks that carrying this thing will make him feel better.
Is it a confidence? What?
Because it's confidence because it helped someone else. Someone else carried it who was just as sick as I was, and he got better. So post hoc ergo propter hoc, I'll get better also. And the Rambam even allows this in the morning in the Mishnah Torah. Doesn't the Rambam know that it's bogus? The Rambam knows it's bogus, that a rabbit's foot does not have the power to cure you. But what does have the power to cure you is
a positive
outlook that carrying the thing might give you. That's all it is. Right? So that's how Ibn Ezra explains this object that he took in. So I have to just tell you that wherever Trofim is mentioned elsewhere in Tanakh, especially in Sefer Yechezkel and Sefer Hosea, it's real Avodah Zarah. At that time it evolved into real Avodah Zarah. It's a problem. I'll admit it's a problem. Okay, next. Vayishlach Shaul es hamalochim lirosis David lemor. Haluos tov mitzah ilai lahamiso. Shaul banged on the door and said, "Get him out of there! I want to kill him now." Vayivoh hamalochim v'inei atrafim el hamitzah. Firoi zimir atrusav. And when they came to the bed, they saw it wasn't David. It was trafim and the kviri zim. V'im Shaul amicha lo makacha rimisini. But shalchi es tov yibim malit. Batama Michal Shaul, who amar elai, shalcheini lama amiseich. So Shaul tells his daughter, "Why did you do this to me? Don't you know he's my enemy? I wanted to kill him and that your brother could become the next king. How stupid is he? Wouldn't you rather your husband becomes the next king than your brother? Were you counting on her to have her husband killed?" Well, Shaul, who has lost it already, assumes that everyone what to do what he wants. Okay? But notice she takes the low road in this story. She says, "I had to save him because he threatened me." Why should I kill you? V'David barach v'malait v'yavo el Shmuel haramasa v'yagid lo es kol asher asalo Shaul v'yilachu Shmuel v'yishbu b'nayos. Right? So David went to Shmuel. Where else can you go? Shmuel, you're the one who got me in this trouble. Right? Help me here. You yourself were afraid that Shaul would kill you if you crowned me king. Tell me, what can I do? Okay, I just want to tell you something in Chazal. It's at this meeting where they were together that Shmuel instructed David as to a crucial element of his kingship. He says, "You rule the king, I crowned you already in your father's house." It's at Noyos that Chazal tell that Shmuel gave David the plans of how to build a base in the bush. Okay, just put it out there. That here is where David came up with the plans of how to build the base of the bush. It is described in greater length in Divrei Hayyam. Why? Divrei Hayyam, it says that Shmuel gave over David written plans of how to build the base of the bush.
Why not give it to David?
It would be his son and will do it.
Why not just give it straight to
Shmuel? She might not be around it.
Who gave Shmuel the one responsible for it?
Yeah, David asked to build the Beis HaMikdash. He was rebuffed, but he did. He was never told you can't plan it. You can't put the raw materials and the resources together. Blueprints. Okay. All right. So this is
a strange time to give him off the plan. Tyrion is running for his life. Oh, by the way, let's discuss the plan. So the Beis HaMikdash can't build.
Even in God's scheme, some things just have to be done, you know, on the fly. It stands to reason, and I have no proof of this, and I'm not even telling you a Gemara now or a Medrash. It stands to reason that we've been waiting an awfully long time to do this, right? We've been waiting an awfully long time to be rid of Amalek. Only Shaul was given the command because you're not going to be able to get rid of Amalek when you're being run by Shoftim, who can never unite the people. Only the king who united the people, remember, he grabbed all those oxen, he cut the oxen into 12 pieces and made everyone come to save the people of Yerush Gilad. We discussed that, right? So when Shaul should have been the one capable of wiping out Amalek, should also have been the one capable of then subsequently building the base of Mikdash. Especially since, in which tribe is the base of Mikdash built? In Yemen. So it stands to reason that plan should have been dictated to Shaul. But now that he is unequivocally demonstrating the behavior that will assure that the kingdom will be lost in perpetuity from your descendants, right, this behavior means that there's no way you're going to live on as king. And if your son rules after you, it'll be for a very short time. So that's why right now David says, "You know, David, these are plans I was ready to be Moser to Shaul for Binyamin. It's now going to you." which is why David felt inspired to be the one to build it. It's the first thing he wants to do upon becoming king of the whole nation. He brings the Aron back, Kiryat Yoharim, and then he asks to build the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, when we get to Shmuel Ben, we'll do that inside. Okay, so David is constantly getting the upper hand, and Shaul melts down. Because wherever David goes, the people favor David. They realize that he's a fugitive, and the king is wrong in chasing after him. Right? So David has to flee from one place to another, and now we get up to the story of Rosh Chodesh. Okay. On Rosh Chodesh, Shaul has a festival. This is the best story we have to prove that there is unequivocally a lunar calendar. Are you familiar with the fact that in the Dead Sea Scrolls, those who wrote them seem to only have a solar calendar? They do not have a lunar calendar. How was that? So the Chodesh is Elohim Rosh Chodeshim. Yeah, they have 12 months maybe, but those months each have 30 or 31 days in them, having nothing to do with the moon. Right? I think that this is very spurious. This pasuk in Tehillim, "Asoya Reach LaMoadim," he made the moon to determine the festivals, right? And if those Dead Sea Scrolls authors are correct, that we determine months by a certain, maybe arbitrary number, the Romans had 10 months with 36, right? And 37 days. Are you familiar with that? Until Julius Augustus added on July and August. And each one, and then they divided into 30 days and 31, but each one wanted the 31. So that's why July and August each have 31 days. Right? Even though they usually, they fluctuate between 30 and 31. Right? But from our story, and this is some, according to some portion, why we read this when Rosh Chodesh falls on Sunday. I believe that's next week. Right? Next Shabbos, the Haftorah is Machar Chodesh. Because Shaul has a two-day festival. Okay? Rosh Chodesh is lunar. You have arbitrary lunar months. It's not what they wouldn't have. Why would you have 2 days? The first day of the month. This is always Rosh Chodesh. Except if you have to celebrate something about the moon. Why do we have 2 days Rosh Chodesh sometimes? Because the moon's circuit around the earth is 29 days, 12 hours, and small change. That means 29, 30. You get it? When it's 30 days, the next month we'll have 2 days Rosh Chodesh. When it's 29 days, the next month we'll just have 1 day Rosh Chodesh. So when you have a two-day festival for Rosh Chodesh, it means already back then they're keeping the lunar calendar the way we have today. Right? You everyone understand that? Okay. So the assumption is that David is supposed to attend this festival, and he doesn't. He It should be obvious why he doesn't attend. You just tried to kill me. Right? How could Shaul even think that David would attend such a thing? It may be that, remember, let's try to think what's in the other one's mind. If David was left out of the window to escape for his life, why would he voluntarily come back to the palace just to be killed again? Or just to have Shaul try to kill him again. He can kill someone again. Didn't I kill you already? What? Because if you get into David's head, he might think, you know, maybe I was wrong. Maybe Michal was wrong about me escaping. Maybe he wasn't going to kill me. Maybe I can go back. I'll go to this Rosh Chodesh festival. He won't kill me in public.
Right? Well, I don't understand the logic of that. You're telling a story now of maybe he won't kill me. He's a smart guy. We saw that he threw the spear at him how many times?
We were alone.
Spear twice, and he sent for me in my room. That does nothing.
There were other times too.
So, okay. It's not. It's more than a chazakah.
Okay, then I turn the tables and I say it was insanity of Shaul to assume that David is Shaul. Okay, I prefer that. Everyone with me? Okay, he doesn't show up the first day, the first party, and they say, okay, maybe he's not Tar. Okay, we'll come to the next one. Second day, he doesn't show up again, and Jonas makes an excuse for him, right? And Shaul responds to him with the closest thing that you can say to profanity in Tanakh. Tanakh is not profane because even words that may be profane, right, are cleaned up. Right? I'm allowed to say, let's say, number two, but I can't say certain other words for what you know that is. Right? I'm not sure why. But I'm sure if I said certain words from the pulpit on a Shabbos morning, right, I can say the word excrement probably, but certain other words you can't say. You know what I'm saying? So the Tanakh uses euphemisms for those kind of things. Yeah, you understand? So here, look at what he talks to his son. His son takes the high road. He says, why do you want to kill David? He's such a loyal servant. Why are you doing this?
Right?
I'm 20. Right? 20:30. Chapter 20, verse 30. Vayicharach Shaul b'Yonah's son after Shaul defends David, Vayomer lo, Ben Na'avas Hamardus. Right? Na'avas means itinerant, rebellious one. Halo yodati gubuchera tola ben Yishai. I see you've chosen Ben Yishai. Leboshtecha u leboshes ervasi mecha. I don't have an English translation here, but I know it's not good.
And unto the shame of thy mother's nakedness.
All right, that's euphemistic, but he's just being, it's just despicable. It's disgusting. How does the king talk that way to his son in public? Don't you know that as long as Ben Yishai is alive, that you'll never become the next king? And Yonah's son can ironically tell him, Daddy, the reason why I'm not becoming the next king, which I already know, it's because of you, not because of David. Okay. Yonatan informs David of that I know that you're going to be the next king. This is why this is called, you ever hear in Pirkei Avos, Ava She'ena Tzluya B'davar? You ever hear of that appellation?
Yeah.
Remember the Ava HaTzluya B'davar? What was that? Also in Sefer Shmuel. Anyone? Ava HaTzluya B'davar. Tamar and Amnon, David's son who fell in love with David's daughter. We'll learn that in Shmuel Bet. David and Yonah's son are the Abba She'enetz Le'yibadav. Do you think that the Mishnah purposely chose two men because they couldn't find a man and a woman who have Abba She'enetz Le'yibadav?
I still
don't
understand.
What? Abba She'enetz means, I love what you do for me. My love for you is tied into your beauty, your wealth, your...
To show that there's no such thing as a platonic relationship.
It's possible. In other words, if a man and a woman have an Abba, She'en, and Tzvi, but it's not love.
So Harry met Sally.
There's no such thing as love between a man and a woman that's love in its pure form. Of course, he's a Hachlo Recha Kamocha, love everybody, right? But there's different loves, right? So the Ava... That's some tliya. I would say it like this: that hava tliya b'davar means that when you love something, it doesn't matter what, it's unconditional. It doesn't matter what happens. But in marriage, that's simply not true. If the wife commits adultery, you can't love her anymore. Well, you certainly can't stay married to her anymore. You know what I'm saying? Right, even halachically. So this tliya b'davar, but if love is really true, it doesn't matter that all right, what a tragedy. You get hit by a car and now you're never going to walk again. And we're in our young 20s, but I'm going to spend the next 70 years with you. I don't care. Right? If love is true, but the verse, he's going to say this, and I'm going to have to divorce her. Let someone take care of her. Let her family take care of her. I'm going to marry someone where I can go skiing and mountain climbing and vacationing. But if love is true and it's real and it's abiding, it doesn't matter. Whatever I do with you is better than anything else I do with anybody else. That's called Ahava She'eina Tluya B'Davar. Okay? And somehow the Mishnah only saw fit to give an example of that, of two men. Now, you have to know that there is a pasuk in Shmuel Bet that says that David loved Yonasan more than the way of women. You can imagine those who have no allegiance to our biblical characters to say what they want about that. But there's nothing hinted in the text at whatsoever. Adarabah. This is proof that they were, David and Yonasan are both married with children. All right, but you know, yeah. But I'm just saying that just because it says I loved him more than the love of women, just means that we had a certain camaraderie that was not erotic in nature, and yet we had that bond. Follow? Okay. So, but I'd say that at certain points in the relationship, and this is really where love. She'ena Tzliya B'Davar makes it you can really fully understand it. And maybe along the way have an explanation back in earlier in Shmuel Aleph why Amalek is treated the way it is. Because they have, what would you call the difference between Sina HaTzliya B'Davar and Sina She'ena Tzliya B'Davar? Go ahead, talk to me. Hatred that's Tzliya B'Davar. Batla HaDavar, Batla HaSina. You follow me?
Because there's something that hates.
So Amalek's sinah of Bnei Yisrael at this point is sinah she'ena tzliya b'davar. It's such a fierce hatred that the hatred transcends their own best interests. Right? When the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, badly needed those trains to bring food and weapons to the front for their soldiers, instead they used them to cart the remaining Hungarian Jewry, 750,000. The war was lost already. Their own soldiers were starving at the front. What do you want from the Hungarians? Leave them be. The war is lost already. Hungary doesn't have a dog in this race anymore. I mean, it's you know what I'm saying? Let them be. Just use the trains for what you need. Instead, one last ditch effort to kill another 750,000 Jews. The machinery for murder was faster at the end of the war than at any other time before. They were feverishly killing 20,000 a day. When to do so was against their own best interests. That is called sinah she'ena tzliya b'davar. It's the opposite, of course, here. I'd rather have sinah tzliya b'davar, but not davar, but not sinah. We'll deal with the davar. The hatred of Jews is sometimes so irrational that there's no dollar involved. It's just that. Recently, Charles showed this. I read there's always calls for boycotts of Israeli products and Israeli inventions and things like that. These boycotts are mostly coming from Jews now. From Jewish federations, from Jewish JCCs and the programs that they have in these places are just amazing. Jewish student unions all across the country. Some crazy stuff. So I read at Charles Schutter's, all the things you shouldn't be using if you want to boycott Israeli technology and Israeli products. It's like 100 things. You can't do anything. You can't use your cell phone. You can't take medicine. You can't take, don't take, you know. When was the last time you saw something made in Saudi Arabia or Kuwait or Qatar or any place? Even one place.
Jewish movements are gaining currency in the United States. This is the new wave of Jewry amongst our age group. It's becoming ever more prevalent. So our numbers are diminishing substantially.
Crazy.
Universities are having very pernicious effect on the Jews' view of Israel as a religion in general.
We can get into it. But anyway, that's what I'm talking about. Ahava She'ena Tzliya B'Davar is this story right here. Because the way Yonasan acts in this story, because of his love for David, he acts in a way that's detrimental to his own interests. Because he knows that he can see truth.
Why? Because Shaul could have killed him and got mad at him?
No. Yonah simply say, you know, Father, you're right, let's go after him, I'll be the next king.
He could have said that.
He could have.
So it's detrimental to says that he
In other words, it's detrimental to his own. Yeah.
It's not really a detriment. I mean, it's like.
It could be that he's, you know, I can see their handwriting on the wall, I can see what's happening in the future. I'm not the next king. And he tells that to David when he meets up with him. They had a deal. I mean, the deal doesn't seem to make sense. Just remember, you know, it's a cryptic. It's a Torah next Shabbos, not this Shabbos, next Shabbos. That if he shoots arrows in a certain way, that means it's not safe for you. Go, run away. If I don't shoot arrows that far, then that means you can come back to the palace. It's safe. I was able to convince my father to calm down about you. Right? What's cryptic about this? Is they meet. They talk, they hug, they say goodbye. They never see each other again. You know what I'm saying? They talk. What do you mean? You have to shoot arrows. Just tell them. You talk, you're hugging them and say, David, it's not safe, go.
Pretty lashon hara about his father.
It's a cute answer, I've heard it. No, the answer is because he did, that was not the plan. The plan was, as soon as you see those arrows, run. Because my father might be already chasing you. Why did she put that dummy in the bed to begin with? No? Okay. To give him more time. Give him a head start, because if they start chasing you 5 minutes after you go, you better believe those dogs are going to catch up to you. Alright? So it gave him a 2-hour head start. So the arrows were supposed to be get him a head start. But David and or Yonatan, it's not quite clear which one more, just relented and said, no, I have to say goodbye, I have to see him and say goodbye.
Is that the last time?
And they never saw each other again. Such a tragic. David was 30 when he became king. This is the end of the line. He's in the 20s. And remember, David is also his brother-in-law. He's married to his sister. Right? So at this point, David has nowhere to go, and he turns to the Kohanim. Remember, the Kohanim is always the story right after this, because I think we discussed this. Chazal are critical of David for putting the Kohanim in danger by asking for them for food.
It's amazing that you read it.
Exactly, with Yoash. Only one child survived. Okay. But they're also critical of Yonatan. What's that? You know, so you're the king's son. You just came from a great banquet. If you had only brought up a glad bag or a hefty bag with some provisions, that you would have saved the whole city of Kohanim. Why didn't you bring David some food? You knew he's a fugitive now, and there's no going back. So we discussed this already. That David now would try Moab, he tried Plishtim, he tried every which way. Nothing else. Nothing's working. Okay. We discussed all those attempts, right? Moab, Plishtim twice, right? And it all failed. And at this time, of course, he knows he doesn't want to go any place in Israel because he's going to put them in danger. And his family was also in danger to send them to Moab too, right? Okay. Right.
But maybe it brings him, because now the fact that they are meeting up, which wasn't the original plan, he doesn't want people to be suspicious. Here he is walking into the woods with a big bag of food. Just from a logical perspective.
Okay, all right. I'm just saying that Chazal are angry with Yonason for not. Look, he was distraught, you know, and what does he have time to think of all these things? Right? So that takes us into number 5, which is David and Abigail. Right, this is Shmuel Aleph. It actually there's a mistake there. It should say Perek Chof Hei, not Chof Beis. It should say Chof Hei. Okay. Right. So I could just as easily have written David and Nahal, but I call it David and Abigail because it sets up an interesting trend in David's life. Right, he always gets the girl. And at this point, what's David thinking? He is grazing in. By now he has 600 men who has been following him. These men are probably just calls them Pochazim, Rekim. They're men who have debt and they're in flight for various things. So they all gather together. They're brigands and rogues. Okay, it's Robin Hood. Okay, but David acts morally. He does not rob anybody. He's just these men are how do they make a living? They hunt. Maybe they despoil some Philistines here and there, I don't know, but this is what these 600 men are doing. In fact, I think we discussed this already, where he tries to convince the Philistines that I'm on your side because me and my men are killing Jews, and here are their spoils. Of course, he's not killing Jews, he was attacking Aram and Edom and others, and then giving spoils to the Philistines. As far as the king of Philistia is concerned, what difference does it make to me where it's coming from? I'm getting my money, getting my protection, and whatever. All right. In the midst of this, David stops off at a man's house named Novo. Novo is a novel. He's a fool. David asks him for some food. All right. Let's read. Here, cafe. The parak starts off by saying, "Vayomas Shmuel." Shmuel died. Now Shmuel dies again in Perek Chav Ches. It's not Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Beis. Why are we told twice that Shmuel died? It says, "Ve'yikavtzu kol Yisrael ve'yispedu lo ve'yikperu ve'yiso barama ve'yokam David ve'yired al midbar paran." Everybody gathered to mourn and to eulogize to bury Shmuel. And his burial place is identified today. Nava Samuel, right?
Right,
in the desert, on the way to Jerusalem. No. You know that the bells of Beis Medrash? Yeah. It's not far from there. It's not far from there. See, his yahrzeit is Yom Yerushalayim. So, Yom Yerushalayim, everyone takes a pilgrimage to Shmuel's Keter. So, why is this told here? Because now that Shmuel is gone, David really has no place to go to. No place is safe in Israel because it's not safe for them to help me, and they're not going to help me because of that. I can't go outside of Israel. My parents have been killed in Moab. David is in a really bad way here. And this is where some of the real distraught Prakim and Tehillim come. Right? Everybody has turned on me. Right? Okay. And he escapes to Midbar Paran. That's very far out of Israel. Because there's no place else to go. Because Shmuel is gone. This is in the very north of Israel. And he has a lot of sheep, and he's shearing his sheep. Shema ish Novol, shem ishto Avigayel. Avigayel. Sort of a masculine kind of name. V'ha'isha tovas mar sechel v'fas toar. Now, this makes her the only person in Tanakh, the only woman in Tanakh, called both beautiful and smart. No one else has that. Some women are called smart, some more women are called pretty, beautiful, but she's the only one called both. Okay. The Mishnah in Maseches Sanhedrin says, if a king already has 18 wives, he may not marry another one, even if she's like Abigail. You get the point. Okay. Ish kashev rama alolim behu kolabi. Kolabi, some say he was descended from Kolev. Some say he had the personality of a dog. So David hears that he's shearing a sheep, which is a great joy in the ancient world, and everyone made a big deal about it. There was always a lot of barbecues, and you're shearing sheep, you slaughter a bunch of them, and you have everyone has a rack of lamb, and David's men are starving. I just thought it was never the first time. It could be that if you have 600 men that are right near a sheep shearing, you're smelling, you ever smell roast lamb? Nothing like it, right? You have 20 lambs roasting on an open spit, and you have starving men licking their chops nearby. You take your little bowl and you say, "Please, sir, can I have some?" Now, isn't David putting them in danger by doing this? Maybe not. The Carmel is way up north, far enough that maybe Shaul won't get word that he's helping. I don't know, maybe yes, maybe no. But David asks with great, great civility, great humility, and he asks for some food. Now, Nabal can just say, I'm sorry, I can't. And maybe David forgets it. But Nabal's response in Pasuk Yud is, Mi David? Mi ben Yishai hayom rabu avadim ha-misportzim ish mipnei adonav? Who is this David? Who is this son of Yishai? And I have to feed everybody here who turns himself to make himself despicable in the eyes of his master? That I should take my water and my bread and my food and all the slaughtered meat that I made for my sheep shearers, and I should give it to men that I don't know? So David's messengers came back and gave him the word. David, right now, responds like a desperate man. Everybody, gird your sword. Pick it up. Maybe smash it against your shield. Make noise. 400 of them went down to wipe out Nabal and his men. And maybe even have a barbecue at the same time. But thank God, Abigail interrupted him. Why do I say thank God? So we're going to start with that next time, but I'll just close up by saying that in Megillah Daf Yud Dalet gives a list of seven Nevi'ot. Right? Ach Shema is your way to remember. Abigail, Chana, Esther, Hulda, Sarah, Miriam, Dora. Right? Seven Nevi'ot, and the Gemara goes at quite a bit of length to discuss how we know that these are actual Nevi'ot. When it says, how do we know that Abigail should be in this short list? Because she's about to tell him. And here's a very interesting thing. I'm not sure if I have it in your Choberet, but Chazal and Daf Yudal and Maseches Megillah have a discussion of how she talked to David. I don't believe that I have it here, but it's a very fascinating difference between a Gemara and a Medrash Shocher Tov. I'll discuss it next class about how she spoke to him. But it is, in essence, she convinced him to back off. And she says, don't let what you're about to do to my husband. This is not marriage. This is in the pasuk. Don't let what you would like to do to my husband and his men be an impediment to your future plans. What's her prophecy?
I hope you can.
More than that.
Thank you for the question.
Maybe even more than that.
Yeah.
That you won't be king if you kill my husband. And the Gemara agrees. That if people find out that you killed a man just because he didn't give you food, they will not want that man to be their king. So she says, don't let this be an impediment to your future plans. You want you to think hard about what you want to do. Alright? The way she talks about her husband and the way she talks about David? No question what's going on here. She says, my husband's a fool. And she, between the lines, she says, I hate him. And in fact, I'd rather be your wife. She outright tells her that. She says, I wish to be your handmaiden that I could but wash your feet. That's a clear euphemism for I'd like to sleep with you. Right?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. She's pretty outright about it. Right? So David tells Uriah, go home and wash your feet. Right? Alright, there are different opinions, but I think that's what's going on. So she is telling, her whole speech to him is Nebuah, according to the Gemara. Right? So we'll continue with that, Mr. Shem, next time, and close our discussion on that's Monday, right?